Welcome back, everyone.
Hi.
Hello.
If I sound a little weird, it's because I have a sore throat.
Everybody's got a sore throat these days. I'm very concerned.
Yes,
It's
but do they all
winter.
have sore throats gifted to them by Iceland?
No, you win the sore throat contest.
Wow, that was like a 30 seconds in a humble brag. Good Lord. Okay.
That's going to be quite a podcast today. Yeah, I'm going to try really hard not to rustle my cord, and that's not a euphemism.
I guess not.
But if you guys hear something, please tell me that I'm rustling around, because I know I've been the cause of some of our sound issues of late.
You're clear as a bell so far.
Yeah, you sound great.
Okay, so I'm here once again with Nick Davis from Nick's Flick Picks.
And if I were in the Bling Ring, I would go to the house of that guy who made Searching for Sugar Man, because that's still so ridiculous, and go give his statue to somebody else who was nominated last year, or to Glenn Close, because I think she'd take it.
Randomness.
Yeah.
Joe Reed from The Wire.
Hey, everybody. I don't have a thing to say because it's very early.
And Katie Rich from Vanity Fair.
If I were in the Bling Ring, I would go take Christoph Waltz's second Oscar. I don't think he'd notice.
And his house can't be that well defended.
No. And like, if I always forget that he has a second Oscar, he probably does too. So,
That's what I'm thinking.
he probably won't even notice. And I'm
Yeah.
Nathaniel from the Film Experience, and I can't tell you or restraining orders would come my way.
You mean you've actually done this?
If I'd actually done that, would Hilary Swank have two Oscars?
I don't know. I haven't seen her lately. Does she still? I don't know. We knew when she was in Chechnya, you could have gone.
So while I was away in Iceland, I'm just going to keep dropping that.
Yeah, you should.
It was what, some people refer to as awards week, which is a silly little term, but they do all like to piggyback on each other. So within about, 7 to 8 days, we had just about everything.
Yeah,
National Society still is the latecomers as always.
As always.
Yeah, but we've.
The Critics' Choice Awards or something Ellen and I vote in.
Yeah, which I think is today or tomorrow announcing.
Oh, really? Today?
Yeah, I mean, the ballots were due on Friday, so I assume.
Yeah, I turned that ballot in at the last possible minute. I was super not prepared for that deadline.
I did too, because when I was flying home from Iceland, I had forgotten about it. So, I mean, I hadn't forgotten about it. I had written a rough draft, but I was going to, watch a few more screeners to fine-tune it,
Yeah.
And then I realized on the plane, because the trip that I was on was for The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, which was filmed in Iceland.
Yes, it was. Sorry, I
It
was just
was, yes. So
trying to
anyway, so
misdiagnose.
but other people who were on the trip were also members of the BFCA, so that was like a discussion point several times about like, is your ballot ready? That sort of thing.
Did you guys collude and try to advance your own favorites in block voting form?
I tried to do that in subtle ways, but critics are, because I was like a newbie and a lot of the people knew each other.
Yeah.
I'm not
Could have been
sure.
like Demon Lover. You could have like walked up and down the aisle injecting the Evian bottles of people who didn't like Short Term 12.
I really should have worked harder to set up a voting block for White House Down for best action film. Because it was not a great year for action films, and I think White House Down deserved a chance, and I don't want Iron Man 3 to win it by default.
Are you abandoning Pain and Gain so quickly, Katie?
Pain and Gain was on my best, it was the top of my best comedy list.
Okay. I don't know if it quite
counts as action.
I believe that I actually abstained from a category this
Was
year. And
it best actress in an action film? Because I had a
I
really hard
believe
time
it
with that
was
one.
the acting in action films, because I was sort of at a loss for what that would be. And I think normally I've seen few more action films than I did this year, for whatever reason. So, yeah, I believe I abstained from one or two of those categories that I couldn't figure out how to fill the ballot.
Yeah, I find myself having to catch up on like the summer action movies in a way I don't normally have to do. Like I watched Pacific Rim last night and I have Man of Steel sort of here. But I feel like
Those are
I
the
just sort of skipped a lot of those this summer.
Yeah, I did a lot of that too. There's a lot of comedies I skipped. Like, I know that I sincerely doubt The Internship would have been on my list of best comedies, right. But like, I hadn't seen it. I think the only like straight up, I mean, I saw We're the Millers and I hated it, and I saw The Heat, and that's kind of it, which is really rare for me. But it was that kind
it's
of
funny thing. Because I keep hearing people saying We're the Millers was like surprisingly good.
I've heard people say that. I couldn't stand
but
it.
But I heard that about This is the End too, and there is no movie I hated more than that movie.
I think that movie's genetically engineered to get on your nerves. That's
that
okay.
is true. That is very true.
So given that all the critics gave out prizes this week, I wanted to, you know, play a little hometown favorites, except for these aren't necessarily our homes. but of the groups that have announced, New York, Los Angeles, Boston, D.C., Detroit, I'm wondering, you know, who holds your heart? Not in general, but in this year.
Not in a gross way either, but just a metaphorical way.
Right.
Yeah, not in a medical way.
Yeah.
Not in an Indiana Jones Temple of Doom way.
Right. Well, I feel like, Nathaniel, you included the Detroit critics in this lineup as a way to remind us all that they're probably the closest you have to hometown critics, right? From your ancestral land.
My ancestral land, was yeah.
Iceland.
Yeah. But
Iceland does not have a film critics organization. I just want to point that out.
And they're just going to go really hard for Walter Mitty anyway. So,
although so many films are filmed there that you would be surprised at the competition.
Well, no,
but Detroit did a really good job. Like they, Brie Larson for Best Actress, Scarlett Johansson for Best Supporting Actress. Like these, even if they're
category
not
category fraud.
Wait, yeah. Which one?
Sorry, Scarlett Johansson for Best Supporting.
Yeah.
Oh, because she's interesting. I'd actually never even considered that. Maybe because it's just that she's just a voice, I sort of diminish the level of participation in that. But yeah, she's basically co-lead.
Yeah, I mean, it's a story of two people, and I use the term people lightly.
I can't see myself getting that worked up about category fraud just because it's so cool. Like, they're stepping outside of... you know, the boundaries anyway for a voice performance. And I mean, a lot of it is that it's a critics organization and they're sort of making a stab for attention. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, mm-hmm. I think more critics groups should do that. I think more
yes.
groups should try to have a little bit of an identity and be a little bit more different than everybody else, if only to... to improve the conversation for people like us is basically what I'd say.
No, but I mean to improve the conversation in general because, yeah. Yes, it's a bit of a bubble, all of these things, but even within that bubble, it's good to widen the topic.
Yeah.
Because, like, how many times can you say Jared Leto is amazing in Dallas Buyers Club before you're like, you know what, he's not the only actor who did good work this year.
Yeah. Right. That's what drives it. I mean, I feel like we've had this conversation several years running about this, but it does continue to be baffling how the groupthink sets in. Even in a year like this one, there's so many options. There's like,
yeah.
even yeah. though there's like three or four different movies winning Best Picture, which is fantastic, it's still a kind of groupthink.
Well, and he's sweeping even more than like Cate Blanchett is sweeping.
Yeah.
And that so I would
Detroit
not
didn't expected. Even nominate.
What's
Cate
that?
Blanchett?
Who Detroit didn't even nominate. Like, if yeah. you look at their list, like, there are a lot of people who are hilariously not even there.
That's yeah. some interesting contrarian thinking. Why not?
I do not even look at the nominations, I have to admit, for critics groups.
It's too confusing.
I only pay attention to the wins.
I like the nominations, though, because those are where, again, you see, you have about your best chance of seeing people who are not going to show up on everyone. Like, Detroit put Stanley Tucci for The Hunger Games on there, which, I mean, I might not have him on mine, but I thought he was really good, and I like that kind of thing where it's like, oh, now at least you know that there were some people in Detroit who were really passionate about Stanley Tucci and The Hunger Games, and that's great.
Hey, thanks to me, The Rock for Pain and Gain made the NIFCO nominations list. So
I knew that. I knew.
So aside from Detroit, did anybody else have a pick? Because Detroit was also my answer. It's not why I included them. I was just trying to include groups
yeah.
that had already announced.
I like that Boston went hard for Enough Said, because I think that movie is really interestingly positioned, and the more people that talk about it, the better. I mean, they gave Gandolfini supporting actor, which is another category fraud situation, but it means they could also give Chiwetel Ejiofor best actor, which he deserves. And Nicole Holofcener got best screenplay, which is fantastic. So I like that lineup.
I'm gonna my mine results in a tie because Nathaniel likes those, and one was San Diego, who gave their actor statue to Oscar Isaac, and they gave supporting actress to Shailene Woodley for The Spectacular Now, which I think is kind of a funny classification a little bit, but I think is a really great performance, and I maybe even like it better than anything else that's contending for that. And there were cool kind of winners all the way up and down, including this body of work citation for Matthew McConaughey in all three of his movies this year, and The Act of Killing and Drug War for foreign film, and To the Wonder for cinematography. I thought it was pretty cool. And the other one would be Los Angeles, which you could predict because I said ties. And well, I'm for them. I like them.
You like them even in that many of them in a row.
Yeah, sure. Who cares?
But don't you think
I know who cares.
No, but aside from my sort of aversion to them, don't you think it sort of kills the sort of advocacy of critics a little bit?
Not really, because I think that this was such a great year, which I think a lot of people strongly feel, and there's so much good work out there, and I don't, if it results in a tie, I don't ever feel like, oh, that means nobody quite liked either one of them quite enough. It makes me think that there were people who were really ardently committed to both, and they didn't want to make the choice. So I loved it, but that's just me.
Do we know what the specific procedure for the LA Film Critics is, in that they get it down to two, and then they have one last vote, and if it's exactly tied, then
they... Yeah, they have... I can't remember the exact, but they have a certain number of rounds, and if it's still a tie in the last vote, then it just remains a tie.
And I think it's a small... Isn't it only, like, two rounds, unlike the New York four, or... As happened.
I can't remember.
I might remember wrong, but I think that's what they said.
In a situation where you're setting it up so that someone like James Franco can be the winner in addition to Jared Leto, I think it's especially worth the tie, because you can say, like, we like both of these people on the same level. Even though James Franco is not going to get an Oscar nomination, Jared Leto doesn't really need the attention, so why not kind of double up your advocacy in that way?
Yeah, but how does it double up? Because the story becomes muted, because... Like, I don't hear people going, oh, thank God Adele won something for Blue is the Warmest Color. I hear, oh, she tied with Cate Blanchett, which is a different story. And I think has less pull with groups like the Oscars, for example, who may be looking at lists, you know, to determine which screeners they put in.
Sure, but they still get to put winner LA Film Critics on the ads. They don't have to say it's a tie.
Sure.
And I think anybody who is actually still looking at the Critics Awards to nominate, which I think fewer and fewer people are doing, like, are still noticing that. Like,
okay.
I also like that the LA critics are upfront about their runners-up. I know New York, you had to do a little bit of digging to at least figure it out, but, like, as they were tweeting out their winners, the LA critics would precede those with runners-up, which I also like, just for that same reason. It's just, like, I like... as many different good accomplishments to get recognition as possible in award season. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is the time when that's possible. Things get, you know, narrowed down so quickly. And I like the fact that we at least know that, you know, that June Squibb and Lupita Nyong'o are sort of like jousting back and forth at all these critics organizations, and one will win and one will runner up. And that creates a little bit of a narrative in and of itself. And you know, I love my narratives.
Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, in the same way, like, I think that when you read the narrative about how the voting goes down in New York, and there are so many rounds of voting and people are leaving and going home, so they're not even there when American Hustle wins by one vote in the sixth round for Best Picture.
Yeah.
And you look from round to round, and it's a totally different kind of configuration. Like, to me, effectively, American Hustle and 12 Years a Slave tied for the Best Film Prize from New York. And I think it actually would have been better to be able to certify that both of those films had such strong support, rather than the weird impression you get that American Hustle is the favorite movie of the New York film critic circle, when, like, kind of not really.
Yeah. And that was probably the most powerful of the Critics Awards, just because that was the one that so few people had seen, that it was kind of, everyone was looking at American Hustle in a completely new way, which is harder to do with 12 Years a Slave or Gravity.
What do we make of the fact that immediately after the New York Film Critics, though, that American Hustle was completely absent from basically all the major, from Los Angeles, from Boston, from National Board of Review? Do we think that was an active, like... something active that the other groups were pushing back against this, because the win in New York for American Hustle was a little bit controversial?
I'm not sure it was pushing back, but I do find it interesting that...
came up so empty-handed.
Yeah, I do find it interesting that, like Mark Harris pointed out, that the New York Film Critics and other film critics' prizes actually, statistically, in the past 10 years, are more likely to vote for something they've just seen than the Oscars are, even though the critics are the same ones that always bitch about the Oscars, a short-term memory. So I do find that interesting, and I also find it interesting that despite everybody I've heard, other than myself, about Wolf of Wall Street, that it hasn't shown up at all.
Yeah.
Because I seem to be the only one that, of anybody I talked to, that had hesitations about the quality of that movie.
No, there's more. There's, you are in company.
Really? Okay. Yeah. It just seemed like I was bombarded with the conversations over there's no movie greater in the history of cinema.
I had to miss the screening last night, but one of my friends who saw it emailed me back and was not entirely impressed with it either. So.
Okay.
There are people out there.
I guess we'll hear more as the embargo breaks.
Well, I feel like that's part of the thing is they broke it so late, and then they, as their publicity team should, I mean, that is their job, tried to really just dominate this conversation of that one screening and said it's a SAG screening, and they went nuts for it, and then it was supposed to be this thing that was just going to take everything by storm. And then the danger of sort of trumpeting that so loudly is... Then all of a sudden you follow that up with a week's worth of Critics Awards where you get a little bit, but not much, including not much at SAG and Golden Globes. Then all of a sudden it's more of a deflation than if you had opened a little bit earlier and it just, you know, didn't happen a little bit more quietly.
Yeah, I mean, especially given all the SAG hoopla and Leo not even showing up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I still suspect that it's going to be one of those Django and Chain things.
But yeah. Even Django like did kind of gangbusters at the Globes, or am I remembering it wrong?
Did it?
I feel like it got like Best Director, and Leo got nominated, and I was at least expecting Scorsese to get a Best Director nomination at the Globes, and was kind of shocked that didn't happen, just because he's such a celebrity director.
Yeah.
I mean, I am getting a skewered perspective, I'm sure, because like. You know, your field of your sample is always skewed if you're just dealing with one or two screenings and, you know, people that you happen to have talked to. But it just...
In Iceland.
Yeah, in Iceland. No, it's true. So it does seem like there's this weird thing going on with Wolf of Wall Street, though. Like, in addition to the embargo, there's also weird... just publicity things about it. Like, you know, I went to the Paramount holiday party and you know, those parties are meant, Katie and I have been to the Fox Searchlight one together in the past, and those parties are meant to be kind of mingly things with the celebrities. And you don't have to talk to the celebrities, but they are walking around and mingling with people typically at these parties. And, you know, Leo came into the Paramount party, but then he just sort of sat at a table surrounded by, you know, bodyguards and friends and didn't speak to anyone. So, and then he wasn't doing any one-on-ones at the junket this weekend. It's just a little odd, I find.
That is the point that just seeing Leo there is supposed to, like, instill this wave of enthusiasm among everybody else. Like, he doesn't even have to talk to people. It's just, he's Leo, and there go the Leo beams everywhere.
Maybe.
It might be like when Jay-Z said to Harry Belafonte how his mere presence was a charity. It might be that.
Well, it might be, but the thing that I thought was even weirder was I was talking... Now, I didn't go to the Wolf of Wall Street junket, but, like, talking to people who were going to go to it, there was even seemed to be some evidence that Martin Scorsese was not going to be talking to the journalists. And I just thought, what is going on?
Yeah.
So I do feel like there's something odd is going on. I don't know what it is.
Well,
I wonder if there's a little bit of lingering issue behind the scenes with the everything it took to get it into theaters by the end of the year, and whether there was a behind the scenes struggle. Look at me making up things out of the clear blue sky.
I know, which is what I'm doing too. But I will say at the Paramount party that Thelma Schoonmaker was there, and I don't know how to pronounce her last name. Schoonmaker.
I've heard Schoonmaker, but I can't.
Nick,
switch.
Do you know?
I forget every time I learn.
Okay. she was delightful. That's all I have to say. She held court like nobody's business.
Good for her.
Telling stories about, you know, her and Scorsese's filmography.
Well, if that movie is watchable, it's probably her heroics that get it there. You know, as the editor, especially on something like this, she must have, you know, she probably fought the hardest battles of anybody.
No, I mean, she did say that, you know, when she was talking to us, she did say that editing improvisational movies, which she said this very much was, like, every scene was basically improvised, was her implication.
Oh, God.
She said she said it was extremely difficult because from take to take, nothing matches.
Yeah.
So she said it was really, really hard to edit down to a workable length.
Although that's kind of been her signature for a while, right? Like, a lot of, if anybody debates Thelma Schoonmaker's editing, it's that she often goes for, like, in, like, you can see incongruities in shot juxtaposition all over Martin Scorsese's movies, and she's always said that she kind of likes those. Mm-hmm. But maybe this is even more than that. So, sell it. All right.
Anyway,
I love the idea of a celebrity editor anyway, so the more attention Thelma can get, like, good for her.
Let's move on to the SAG nominations. Well, let's start with our worst pick for their worst decision, and then we'll move on to best decisions.
I held out last time, so I'll go first this time. I just don't get Forrest Whitaker in The Butler. I haven't always gotten Forrest Whitaker as an actor anyway. I think it's kind of an interesting case of somebody who gives an amazing performance and then kind of graduates to a new level of expectation. So I don't think it's like a bad performance exactly, but I often feel like I watch him in movies and don't quite understand what I'm getting from him, and I certainly feel that way in The Butler. And given the other options that are out there this year, I found that pretty mystifying. But, you know, they've had the movie out for a long time and they've done amazing publicity on it, so I'm sure everybody in that huge organization had seen it.
Mm-hmm. Half of them are in it.
Yeah, exactly.
Katie?
I mean, that was basically what I was going to say. I mean, I could say, like, rattle off the list of actors who were left out in favor of Forrest Whitaker. I mean, not even Robert Redford, actually, who I like fine, but I've still been pulling hard for Oscar Isaac. Or, again, Leonardo DiCaprio, who, you know, there are all these crackpot theories about when he will ever win his Oscar, if so. And I feel like this is a good year for him, and I would like to see him showing up in this. But as much as I still think Wolf of Wall Street has a chance for resurgence, I would have expected him to show up in there instead of Forrest Whitaker, who I agree with Nick is totally fine, but not doing anything that puts him in a category with all the other people on that list.
Mm-hmm. Joe?
It's sort of hard for me to single out SAG more than anybody else on this issue, but I really, really thought Jennifer Lawrence was pretty bad in American Hustle. And it's, like I said, SAG's not the only the organization giving her nominations and even awards, so it's tough to single them out. But it's going to be something that's going to nag at me a little. I love Jennifer Lawrence. I've loved everything she's done up until now, so I don't want to, like, participate in whatever, like, backlash is coming her way. But this performance specifically, I thought, was a miscalculation and sort of went off the rails in a way that she couldn't really recover from. And it's gonna
Please use your phrase. Use your phrase.
What's that?
Use your Cold Mountain phrase.
Oh, God. Her Zellwegerian march to the sea? Yeah. Yeah, it was very Ruby Thews to me, I have to say. It's going to bum me out every time I have to really talk about this in relation to every award show. Because, like I said, I like her a lot and I don't want to, like, rag on her. But I did not like that performance.
If she wins, what will happen to you? Will you just melt into a...
I'll just feel sad for her because it's going to inspire a lot of backlash. Yeah. Whether other people liked the performance more than I did or not, I feel like there's something brewing out there for her that I'm not looking forward to.
I think with her, with that performance, I go back and forth on whether I thought it was really good or really bad. It's like one of those razor-thin margins.
It was. It was on the razor's edge for quite a while in that movie.
But I think that's a like almost one of the purest examples of sheer star power I've seen in a performance where you sort of don't care whether she's bad or great in it because she's just so insanely watchable. So that's sort of the reaction that I had to her. Like, that movie, more than anything she's done, actually has convinced me of, like, how gigantic of her career is going to be. Like, beyond Hunger Games, you know?
Yeah.
But I, for me, the nomination I object to most from SAG, just because I completely don't understand it. There's two things that I completely don't understand, and they're both ensembles. I do not understand the cast nomination for Dallas Buyers Club.
Yeah.
Like, not even 1% understanding. Because the entire show is Matthew and Jared, and I actually think the other people are adequate at best, except for the people who aren't included in the nomination, like the smaller roles. And on that same note, I completely can't figure a stunt nomination for an ensemble in All Is Lost when there's one character and Robert Redford did most of his own stunts.
And then they didn't nominate him for Best Actor.
Yeah, I just...
They think he's a better stuntman than actor.
Right.
So that's fine.
Right.
I mean, an ensemble would imply more than one person.
Yeah.
I just there's so many movies that have action sequences that I'm just mystified by that.
I can sort of see that a little bit.
One of those jokes that actually happened, like, probably, 150 different people who all thought they were being clever by being the write-in vote for Robert Redford in that category. And as we all find out on the internet all the time, nobody came up with anything first. Everybody thought everybody did the same thing, and now look what's happened. Especially since, like Katie was saying before, this hasn't been the most amazing year for action movies, where you expect to see really good stunt stuff, mm-hmm. and even some of the good ones aren't really, like, good stunt movies. Like,
yeah, The Place Beyond the Pines, that had pretty good stunts.
That's a great idea.
Like, that whole motorcycle sequence in the beginning was pretty amazing.
Yep.
I totally
forgot. I'm not going to defend the nomination. I just think I feel like that's how it happened. Like, how Uggy probably almost got nominated for Best Supporting Actor. It probably happens all the time.
Like, vote for the worst, that old American Idol thing.
Yeah. Yeah, you're calling Robert Redford the Sanjaya of the world. But
I will say, I'm kind of happy that SAG, when they were looking at which blockbusters they were going to nominate for stunt, that because the Wolverine sort of like was a middling, sort of sat in the middle of this year's blockbusters in terms of attention, that had the best action scene I saw all year.
On the bullet train, right?
The bullet train, yeah. That was phenomenally rendered. And I'm glad I'm assuming that's what pushed this nomination, and I'm glad it got it. Mm-hmm.
And how about best, Joe, since while you're on your roll from Wolverine?
Yeah, I think originally, probably, if you would have asked me as soon as these nominations were handed out, I would have said Barkhad Abdi, because I thought he was a bit of a long shot at this point, but now he's sort of got this momentum in the Golden Globes. I think he's well on his way, whereas now the Gandolfini nomination to me is something that seems like they're more out on a limb for, and I'm happy that they did that as well.
I have two, but I think you guys are going to echo one of them. August Osage County in for ensemble. I really like this movie. I don't think it is as good as the play, but that's not really a fair comparison. And so I was happy to see August Osage County make it in for the ensemble, because it is a true ensemble, unlike some of these other nominees, like 12 Years a Slave, where there are great people not sharing the screen together. And it's been unclear to me how this movie was going to fit in with all the other Weinstein stuff, because they're competing against themselves, as we'll be discussing later. But I was glad to see it get this resurgence. And, you know, you can debate whether or not Julia Roberts deserves to be in the supporting actress category. But the ensemble, I think, is pretty unimpeachable, and they deserve to be in that group.
Nick?
Gandolfini.
Yes.
It speaks for itself. I really hope he wins.
Yeah, I have to say, for me, the SAG, it was one of the most disappointing nomination lists I'd ever seen, just because the stuff that was deserving was always going to be there, like, wasn't going to require any discernment whatsoever, because, like, everybody's voting for it, but the other choices it just seems like a really, really uninspired list to me. So I'm just happy to see 12 Years a Slave, you know, all over the place.
The other one that I want to stick up for that was my favorite was Daniel Brühl kind of roaring back in and getting attention for the first time in a long time. He's another category fraud example, but I really thought he was great in Rush. So I'm really happy to see him back.
Yeah, it certainly seems like that's well on its way to maybe happening now, too. An Oscar nomination for that.
I'm unfollowing both of you right now.
I watched Rush for the first time last night in my, you know, wild catch-up phase that many of us are in right now for year's end. I have to say I'm with Nick on this one.
You don't even like him in it?
He's fine in it, but it just seems so, Nick's word is so perfect, it just seems coarse to me. Like, everything is so obvious, from the performances through, like, the edits, through, like, the framework. Like, I couldn't understand why it had won so many good reviews.
Well, now it's just going to be two-on-two flag football, me and Katie against you.
Yeah, well, we're all playing football, so we may as well vary the team sometime.
And the thing is, Daniel Brühl, like, but, you know, that said, he is one of my favorite young actors, so I'm happy to see him get some acclaim. I just, you know, wish it had been for one of his many, many better performances before this, even though he's not bad in it at all.
Yeah. I think he and Chris Hemsworth are both fine.
Yeah.
Any of it at their feet.
And as I tweeted last night, will someone please explain to me how Ron Howard, of all people, understands how to exploit Chris Hemsworth's body more than the people who are making fucking Thor?
Thor does a pretty okay job.
There's a good beefcake shot in Thor 2.
Thor, I still remember, like, the disappointment that he had his shirt off for less than 2 seconds.
There's a full-on,
like, he spent months making that body happen, and he gets less than 2 seconds of screen time for it?
There's well, as you would know, all people, it's cold in Scandinavia. You can't be running around like that. You were probably shirtless the whole time in Iceland and listen to how you sound.
Like, I just don't get it. Unless you're going to tell me that Thor: The Dark World actually has him shirtless.
Yeah, but it's dark.
It does. It's dark.
But for how many seconds?
It hands up his torso ever so slowly. Like, it knows what it's doing.
Okay, but Ron Howard gives him a whole nude scene and chest scenes.
It's true.
I hope the National Society of Film Critics is having this same conversation.
I think this is how how Daniel Brühl got the SAG nomination. They got up on a tangent and Chris Hemsworth. They're like, all right, may as well.
Listen, if the best ass shot doesn't get more attention than the best ensemble category, I don't know what kind of business we're all in.
That's right. It's like the Alliance of Women Journalists have that prize, the best use of nudity.
Yeah. Do they really?
Yeah, they really do.
Nudity or sexuality or seduction.
Oh my God.
Ladies' concerns.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that seems grim. Okay.
Yeah, as if men don't also concern themselves with nudity.
We do.
So.
Well, we've taken it straight from SAG to nudity. Make that be the headline.
So, best and worst Globe nominations. So I'll start here since I'm already talking. My worst Globe nomination, I don't have a specific thing other than I'm disappointed, as always, that there's just rampant category fraud. Because the Globes are one of the only places that sometimes doesn't buy into that, since they have so many more categories. They tend to be able to not buy into it and still nominate the people they want to nominate.
Which are you referring to in this case?
Well, like Julia Roberts. Like, you have you have like 10 best actresses, so like, why lie? Just put her in best drama. You didn't need Kate Winslet in Labor Day, I'm sorry.
Because it's not a drama, as you know. It's a freaking comedy.
Right, that's true.
It's a gut buster.
Yeah, this is the weirdest year for the drama-comedy divide by far. Which Joe has written about as well.
Yes.
It's funny, though, because like I feel like I'm the least outraged about this than anybody else. I just find it very, like, the choices are all kind of puzzling, but like, pretty much all of the musical or comedy nominees have some, and I haven't seen Wolf of Wall Street yet, but have some either comedic streak or comedic structure. Like, I think Nebraska is structured like a comedy. It's not like a laugh out loud comedy, but
oh, I think that one's definitely a comedy.
I feel like August Osage County is a lot more of a comedy drama hybrid than people are giving it credit for.
Totally fair. And
I think ultimately these movies are not a great fit in either, and sometimes we sort of look at drama as the absence of comedy, and just sort of like, if you are not funny enough, you're in drama. And I don't know, I can sort of see it both ways. Whether Saving Mr. Banks is any more comedic than August Osage County, you got me. I don't know. That to me is kind of strange, and having to split these hairs is kind of weird anyway. I think ultimately what you're looking at is the Hollywood Foreign Press gravitates towards kind of Oscar-y movies in any category. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's maybe the problem, is that they'll go towards prestige over genuine, like, funny movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that kind of thing is going to be a problem no matter what. I think this year there were a lot more movies on that borderline that you could plausibly throw into musical or comedy, and then you have what we have.
Well, I mean, everybody should read Joe's article on this, because it's really a good read on the problems with the divisions there. But one thing that I do think is interesting that I don't think you mentioned in that article, Joe, is I actually think television comedy gets this a little better in terms of, on television, for whatever reason, people seem to enjoy sophisticated laughs. But when sophisticated laughs are in movies, they think of it as a drama that just happens to have some laughs.
Well, I think in
which is totally wrong, I think.
Yeah, television's a lot better because it has much more of a strict structural divide, particularly with half hour versus hour. It just sort of, the categories firm up a lot easier. Although
Edie Falco would disagree with you.
Well, right. That's what I was just about to say. Edie Falco, and I remember when Toni Collette won the Emmy for United States of Terra, and sort of the comedy community, such as it is, got really, really angry about that, because not only because one of their own was beaten out by, you know, one of these highfalutin Hollywood ladies, but also because that sort of Showtime brand of, you know, half hour shows that really blended comedy and drama and were not strictly speaking like laughers, were being prized over something like Amy Poehler for Parks and Recreation, or Tina Fey, even though Tina Fey had won Emmys before. So I feel like there's even creep into that. I think more and more there's just these genre divides are blurring. I think in TV it's holding a little stronger, like you said, Nathaniel, and I think a lot of that is because of structure. But even that, I think cable is blurring that a lot more.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I just think it's an interesting topic overall, because people – I don't understand why people would like the division so much, which is why I enjoyed that point of your article, is like, why even divide, you know? Yeah. Because like Mad Men, for example, we're, you know, going way off topic, and I apologize. It is one of the funniest shows on television. But I don't think anybody would categorize it as a comedy.
Right.
And so like something like August Osage County, you know, bringing it back, as we should... I do think that's a comedy. It's just that the laughs are of a very, you know, when they're played well, at least on stage, I'm not a huge fan of the movie, you know, it's very, very dark and bitter comedy, but it's still comedy.
Yeah.
And so I just think people, for whatever reason, when people think of film comedy, they think of things like Grown Ups 2. And I'm sorry, but I would rather have the Globes go for all prestige stuff than, you know, have to, you know, skim that pond. You know?
But wouldn't you have rather seen The Heat in here than some of the picks that they shoved in the
comedy? Sure, but The Heat is like a really good comedy.
And yeah, but
and
like
I just don't think, like, I would say, like, I'm one of these people who's very anti-TV is better than film that is so rampant now on the internet, but I do think in terms of comedy, TV is better than film. Because for whatever reason, comedy and film, pure comedy, is often very, very stupid. You know, things like Adam Sandler movies or, you know, that sort of thing.
Well, no one was ever going to nominate an Adam Sandler movie for the Golden Globe. But I think that...
No, but even The Heat, it is kind of dumb comedy. It's just good dumb comedy.
So I say nominate it, because it's good dumb comedy. I just think it's a good comedy. I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess my only contribution here is that I don't even mind the... This is debatable as a contribution, I'll say that. I don't mind the vagueness of the... Like, I think it makes sense that these things blur together, and sometimes you just get a year like this year that has this many movies that are kind of on the line. I think the only thing that I find sort of disheartening about it is that it just feels the same way that the screenplay categories at the Oscars started to feel, where it was just so obvious that people are making decisions based on where they think they have a bigger shot than what they actually think about their own movies. Mm-hmm. And that just started to feel really disheartening around the Greek Wedding, Before Sunset years, Gangs right. of New York years, yeah. of just completely, even in the middle of publicity campaigns, sometimes visibly switching horses after telling us all about the fantastic history book you adapted into Gangs of New York and then completely shutting up about it. And, like, now the Globes just kind of feel like, in this way, such an overt performance of the studio's own tacticalness. Like, I don't care if things wind up in a category where it's debatable that they're there, but I care more that this has become so much less and less and less about the movies than more and more and more about what are perceived as open slots. And yeah. it's for me to care about that because this is the golden fucking Globes. And if you're looking for an honest competition, you probably shouldn't be in a movie awards geek. But this does feel a little bit beyond the pale, I guess.
But this
no,
is
I absolutely co-sign all of yeah. that. It. I wasn't, you know, trying to say that I was against pure comedy, but I co-sign all of that. I just think the people's definition of comedy is really slim when they get mad about what's nominated.
Yeah. I take your point.
This is also nothing but support for my idea that we need an international court for movie matters, perhaps in the Netherlands, that can decide things.
Or Iceland.
Or Iceland, yeah. Categories, once and for all, one ruling. Or that can decide for journalists that it's the 2013 awards season and not the 2014 Oscars. Like some SEO people are demanding that I do and I can't deal with that.
I am so angry about that, and that's a way
it drives me crazy.
Tangent, but it, like, I don't even understand when it started or why people don't understand that the Oscars themselves refer to it as the film year.
Yeah.
So that's what it is.
Yes.
That's what it's always been since the 20s.
I'm going like, to end up on a street corner just screaming about it in front of the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion, even though that's not where they have the Oscars anymore. I don't care.
And this is the sound of four people with real problems. That our lives are hard.
No, people don't understand, Nick. This is the peril we're facing.
But anyway, there's got to be some room in The Hague for another court somewhere, and I will support this.
I agree.
Maybe they can just let the people who do the Santa Barbara Film Festival make these decisions. Just give a prize to everybody. Just absolutely everybody gets the prize. No divisions, no worries.
Oh, God. Your interns, Nick. Your interns will get on it.
My interns are on it.
Yeah, I just figure if the Tony Awards have committees that do this, why can't the Oscars?
Yeah.
Well, were we going to talk about our favorite Globe nom? Were we still doing that? Or
Did we even go our worst? Or we didn't. It was only Katie. And then we switched over to comedy versus drama.
Oh, well, mine was Rush, but I didn't want to belabor it.
I don't even think I got to say my worst one.
Yeah, I don't...
You guys, I watched Philomena yesterday. It's not the Iron Lady of this year in that I finally watched it. And I would pick on Judi Dench if I could, because this actress category feels like it's blowing people out, but I think she's great at it. But nominating the movie for Best Picture Drama seems insane to me.
Yeah.
Like, the movie is fine. It's put together in an assembly that makes the performances stand out, and that's basically all it does.
Yeah.
So that was a super bizarre nomination to me.
Yep.
But it allowed Zoe Saldana to say Philomena.
See, I didn't even watch the video. I was like so crazed trying to get the nominations typed up. I didn't even watch that.
I didn't watch that because I was in Iceland.
Of course you were.
My favorite nomination. My favorite nomination was Greta Gerwig.
Yep.
And I wouldn't have been that excited about it had she not been so stiffed for so long by so many organizations I thought would rally around her.
Like the Indie Spirits.
Right.
I love that she's a Golden Globe nominee, but not an Indie Spirit nominee. Like, how fucking crazy is that?
Right.
I hope she enjoys that irony.
Yeah.
I hope she has no more independent spirit at all now. I hope she just goes for it and stars in Grown Ups.
She already did make the Arthur remake, so.
That's true.
That's right.
True.
Yeah. Well, Nathaniel, since you took that, I'll say my favorite, then, is Please, Mr. Kennedy in Best Original Song.
Yes.
Especially because it's not eligible for the Oscar, but also because I'm just going to pretend that that's the one that shoved out Young and Beautiful by Lana Del Rey, and that made me doubly happy.
So mean.
Good line reading.
I can't deal with that song. Oh, I'm so happy that it didn't get nominated.
Although it might still have the Oscars, and then you'll have to listen to it.
I know. I'm bracing myself.
On your street corner.
Yes. Me and Laura Dern with her sign for Inland Empire.
Before we wrap up, I wanted to talk briefly about Weinstein versus Weinstein versus Weinstein versus Weinstein.
Right.
Because... You're not interested in my favorite gold.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I mean, I hear you. I see what's happening. Actually, it's not interesting, but like it turns out that this is similar to what you said about SAG, but my favorite Globe nomination is 12 Years a Slave for Best Picture. It just is. Like, it's not a surprise nomination, but since there's no one performance that stood out to me as like a big advocacy pick for me, I just think it's amazing that like we've ignored those kinds of stories forever, and now that movie's so great and has 7 Golden Globe nominations and is such a front runner. I think it's just easy to like get dulled to the front runners. And just like you said about SAG, I just think it's so wonderful that that movie's doing so well.
I do too. And it's even doing well at the box office. So
yes,
I'm so happy for it.
Putting together my top 10s, I was like looking at 12 Years a Slave and trying to be like, oh, but everyone else likes it. Don't I have another weird favorite? And I don't, that's my movie. And it's good to embrace the front runner sometimes.
When the frontrunner deserves it, yes.
Yeah.
This podcast has been brought to you by Plan B and
the final topic, because we are running late. The Weinstein Company usually dominates the Oscars. They have won Best Picture several times recently. But they seem to be having a little bit of trouble this year, sort of really cementing what's going to happen for them in terms of Best Picture. They have Philomena, August Osage County, Fruitvale Station, Lee Daniels, The Butler, and Mandela, Long Walk to Freedom. So those are their ponies this year. And why did I say ponies? Now I sound like Gold Derby. I'm so sorry. People say this about Weinstein Company every year. Oh, they have too many. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the shotgun approach, but it always works out for them. So I'm curious what your guys' read is on what's going on there, because like none of them seem to have really gained a foothold. Even The Butler, which did well at SAG, didn't do well at the Globes, no nominations. And Philomena, which did well at the Globes, didn't really take hold except for Judi Dench elsewhere.
Right.
And Fruitvale's only winning first film prizes. What do you guys think is going to happen?
I don't know. I think this is kind of like the bed that the Weinsteins made that they now have to lie in. Like, they, more than anybody, everybody knows this. This is not news. But, like, I think that they really think that getting an Oscar nomination and the nominations that are supposed to go along with that or lead up to that are the only way to make a claim that a movie is well-liked and great. And I think some of those movies, like Fruitvale and The Butler, were never going to be super well-served by being thought of as Oscar candidates. Like, even if they wind up there, it's a weird way to promote either of those movies, or a strange expectation, I think, to put on them. And then, like, August Osage, I think, has been so weirdly marketed. The trailers have always been weird. The director that they hired is weird. The release date is completely confusing. It feels like it's kind of, like, been circulating out for a while in critic screenings, but isn't opening. All of which seems like a series of frenzied tactics to try to get nominations that now aren't coming. Whereas if they had not seemed so hell-bent on getting them, it would just be another movie that's opening right now. So I don't blame anybody except for them.
I'm really not looking forward to the Mandela marketing that's going to start happening in the next couple weeks, like after Nelson Mandela's death is a little bit more in the past and it doesn't seem so callous. It's going to be... Like, did any of you read that article that was in The Wrap where Harvey Weinstein got on the phone with them and was, like, weeping from London? And, like, Sharon Waxman, like, has in parentheses, like, calling Mandela Madiba. Like, it's so... It's going to be really gross, and I really wish that... I haven't even watched the movie yet. I will eventually. I just am really not looking forward to that.
I saw it the other night, and I liked it a good deal better than I thought I was going to like it, because I feel like I had been kind of numbed by the reviews that had sort of placed it in the same bin as all of the uninspired biopics. And it takes a while to get going, but ultimately I really liked Idris Elba and Naomi Harris in it. I feel like they sort of buoy it in the latter half. As far as Weinstein on the whole, I just feel like everything sort of settled around the same level this year.
Yeah.
And nothing – usually the thing with Weinsteins is they have all of these contenders, but one or two of them will just sort of – they will emerge on their own. They will find their passionate defenders. I think Silver Linings Playbook did that last year at Toronto, was that Weinstein didn't have to make that happen so much as they let it happen. You know what I mean? Like they let the Toronto Film Festival sort of tell them what movie they were going to push, and then they ran with it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this year...
And Cannes decided the artists for everything,
I'm sure. And I feel like this year nobody did that with any of these movies because they all sort of fall in the same slightly disappointing level for people. I don't think there was any... Just Fruitvale came closest. And I still think that of all of these movies, Fruitvale Station was the one that maybe the Weinsteins should have taken some of that initial enthusiasm and run with it a lot harder. And really, I think as competitive as Best Actor is, Michael B. Jordan was a very gettable nomination that if they had gone harder earlier, it could have happened. And now it just seems like it's not going to.
Well, it just seemed like they got distracted by The Butler at exactly the time they should have been pushing Fruitvale.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of, I mean, Philomena is for sure a giant crowd pleaser, right?
Yeah.
And it was the runner-up at Toronto. I think a lot of people are going to love it when they start seeing it now. You see them trying to, like, foment the, this is a movie that's willing to take a brave stand against the Catholic Church, and suddenly it's
but
like
also
a serious bastion
then,
movie.
But then they were outraged when Kyle Smith accused it of being anti-Catholic and put out a whole full-page ad in the New York Times attacking a movie critic.
So, like,
was
ebulliently
crazy.
Outraged, right? Like, completely
delighted
that their plan was working.
Oh, my God. Right. So, how dare you accuse them of being anti-Catholic?
Yeah. So, I wonder how much they'll keep kind of trying with that, although for the reasons that you said, Katie, like, that's a hard movie to put a whole lot of pressure on as your big bastion of quality from any given year.
Or do you guys think we're all going to be surprised and they will triumph yet again and they'll manage to get, you know, two or three of these nominated?
Philomena will be the Cider House Rules of this year.
Oh my God.
I mean, it's possible.
So hard when Philomena wins Best Picture. Everything is insane.
But talking about nominations, don't you think it's still possible?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, anything could still happen. I just think that, I mean, in a way, I kind of like it that the Weinsteins are one of the few studios that you're still completely conscious from year to year which movies are theirs, because that's kind of a fun throwback to, you know, companies really being proud of their stable.
Right.
But they're also so completely bound up with perception and manipulating at the level of perception that now all these movies seem kind of slightly like underperformers, and most of them haven't even opened yet, because... Mm-hmm. Their own company can't help putting them in that kind of pageant position months before they're even finished filming. Mm-hmm. So I think that's too bad. Even if they get the nominations, they'll still be seen as kind of not having gotten enough of them or something.
Yeah. I mean, that's one thing. Another reason I'm really proud of, like, 12 Years a Slave, and even, like, you know, Gravity, for example, which I don't really like that much, but these were movies that, you know, they planned an opening date and the festival went well, and then they just opened.
Yeah.
And they didn't worry about, you know, like, how are we going to sustain it until the Oscars, because, you know, I'm assuming they figured quality will out, you know.
Yeah.
And it's working out really well so far.
And, like, I think, yeah.
And I think to some extent, if Fruitvale does, you know, rally at the end, that will be true of that too, because it did, you know, just open when it was going to open, you know.
And so, it does give me hope for how they might handle the Mandela situation, because they didn't beat the Trayvon drum as unappetizingly as I thought they might for
Fruitvale.
Sure, true.
So I hope that that could in any way be a bellwether about what to expect now, although probably not.
But do you guys think we might be underestimating them because the acting branch is so large, and they did get two nominations for Best Ensemble. Two of the five.
For Fruitvale?
No, for The Butler and August Osage County.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to get a bunch of acting nominations. And I still think either of those could find their way into Best. If The Butler gets the Best Picture nomination, I'll be highly amused. But I think it could totally happen. I won't either.
Yeah. And August Osage County, I think, is probably, if I were to predict Best Picture right now, I'd put it in there.
Really?
Yeah. I think ultimately that acting ensemble is going to be very attractive to the actors voting. Mm-hmm. And I think ultimately when you look at this Best Picture list, like if they go for 9, like I would not be at all surprised to see that among the 9 most notable movies of the year for people.
Even after 12 years, Gravity, Saving Mr. Banks, Nebraska, Wolf of Wall Street, American Hustle, Captain Phillips, Her, Inside Llewyn Davis. I mean, there are a lot of movies that people like.
I think
like.
He knows the movies that are out.
I also think that I think Her.
Nick, you're so argumentative today. I just mean like a lot of things are doing really well.
Yeah, I have a feeling Her is going to be not quite the cup of tea for the Oscar demographic that it's been for the critics. And I think I could see that getting sort of a quote-unquote surprise, quote-unquote snub.
Yeah.
On Oscar nomination morning.
I could see that.
And Captain Phillips, I think the Globe sort of resurrected what I had seen was sort of a kind of fading buzz for that movie, as a movie that I love and I really, really want to see on the Best Picture list. But I think that's sort of it's wavering in those last couple slots.
Mm-hmm. I would be surprised to not see it in there. I mean, given that Greengrass has done well with them in the past.
And it did so well financially.
Yeah. Yeah, you kind of forget about that because it opened around the same time as Gravity. So Gravity got all the box office attention, but it really has done pretty well.
Done very well, yeah.
Which is why San Diego gave it Best Editing, which is why I love them.
Yeah.
I wish I hadn't even noticed the San Diego list. I guess there was too many. Or it happened while I was in Iceland, maybe.
It was a couple days ago. I think you were probably in Iceland.
It was a couple. I don't even know why I know. I don't. What's San Diego to me? I don't know.
But, I mean, San Diego does at least make interesting choices in Best Supporting Actress, usually.
Mm-hmm. What was theirs this year?
Shailene.
It was Shailene year. They did Vanessa Redgrave for Coriolanus recently, and they did Michelle Pfeiffer for White Oleander. They tend to step outside of the usual, you know.
We need to find out who the actress sexual is, who's our sleeper cell in San Diego.
I know.
Finally pay that person.
Thanks for discussing this insane awards week where everything happened and nothing happened really because the Oscar nominations are still 30 days away.
Woo!
Or 32, is it? Something like that.
30-something.
A lot could still change. 31 days and 21 hours from right now.
Until the 2013 Oscar nomination.
That's right.
Bye.